Major support for this podcast comes from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, conserving our wild things and wild places for over 25 years.
They're a little odd looking, and that's what makes them endearing to people.
I feel like when people are around them, I mean, they're just in awe.
Because it's such a unique fish, you show a picture and people are actually going to probably be very interested in what's going on.
Intrigued? Stay with us. From Texas Parks and Wildlife, this is Under the Texas Sky, a podcast about nature and people and the connection they share. I'm Cecilia Nasty. During this episode of Under the Texas Sky, my colleague Aubrey Buzik from Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's press office takes us to deep East Texas and the ethereal, watery world of Caddo Lake. It's where Parks and Wildlife and partners from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Caddo Lake Institute are bringing back a fish as old as time.
Sometimes the canary in the coal mine is a fish in a river. At Caddo Lake in Deep East Texas, that fish is older than a dinosaur. And so weird-looking that it's instantly lovable when you see one. Aww. Their common name, paddlefish, and colloquial names, spoonbill cat or shovelnose cat, reference the most recognizable feature about the fish, the long, flat, bill-like snout that makes up one-third of their entire body length. Their chubby gray body is entirely cartilaginous, meaning it has no bones, and they swim around with their huge, toothless mouth gaping open like a whale.
They're a little odd-looking. And that's what makes them endearing to people.
Mike Montaigne is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Paddlefish Restoration and Recovery Project Leader. In this podcast, we will hear more from him and others about how this strange-looking fish has become the poster child for restoring the health of an entire ecosystem. Despite being the oldest surviving animal species in North America, old enough to watch the dinosaurs come and go, very recently humankind almost wiped paddlefish out from Texas completely. At Caddo Lake, they began to disappear after changes were made to the watershed, particularly the construction of Lake of the Pines Dam in 1959 on Big Cypress Bayou. Since paddlefish need pulses of water in order to reproduce, the interruption caused spawning to stop, and within a few decades, researchers couldn't find paddlefish anywhere in the lake. In 1977, Texas began protecting the paddlefish, listing it as a state-threatened species and prohibiting anyone from catching, killing, or harming them in the state. And in 2014, a paddlefish restoration dream team formed to proactively reintroduce paddlefish to the cypress-lined waters of Caddo Lake.
We started with a lot of different groups getting together to think about what do the natural flows need to be in the river to support a fish like paddlefish.
Tim Bister is a Texas Parks and Wildlife Department fisheries biologist who's been involved from the beginning. Along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Caddo Lake Institute, and many others, these groups organized to make a plan to save the paddlefish and in turn benefit all of the fish, wildlife, and people that depend on the health of Caddo Lake. First things first. To allow the paddlefish to survive, they had to work with the managers of the dam upstream of Caddo Lake to establish a flow regime that mimics Mother Nature. Here's Laura Ashley Overdyke, the executive director of the Caddo Lake Institute.
So the dam pretty much completely stopped any variability in flow for this lake and lowered the amount of water coming into the system considerably. So in the Flows Project, we have mimicked nature by having a springtime pulse of water. It does a lot of good for bottomland hardwoods along the shoreline, but it also does a lot of good for the paddlefish.
Paddlefish don't just need the springtime pulse of water to cue spawning. They also need a relatively hard bottom surface to lay their eggs on. Without much flow, sedimentation covers up that hard bottom.
So now that the flow has been returned, that spawning cue is there. Also, the scouring of the sediment is there. And just in case, we also worked with the Corps of Engineers to put in some gravel bars so that they would most definitely have a place to spawn when they reach sexual maturity.
With these changes, things were looking up for paddlefish at Caddo Lake. Good flows? Check. Spawning habitat? Check. But one question remained. What happens downstream of the lake?
If we put fish in, will they go over the spillway and can't get back into the lake?
There was only one way to find out. put some paddlefish in and track them.
At that point, we implanted 47 paddlefish from Tishomingo National Fish Hatchery with radio tags that lasted for 1 year. These fish were almost 2 years old. They were probably about 400 millimeters long. And so we released all those, some at Caddo Lake State Park and some up at the town of Jefferson Boat Ramp.
Well, what happened?
And what we found is, in fact, we could not for sure say that any of them went over the dam.
Yay! What came next, Mike?
Let's go ahead and try it again just to make sure. And so we implanted another 26 paddlefish that were a little over a year old and put them out as well. And in fact, we could not prove that any of them went over the dam either.
That's great news for the baby paddlefish. At this point, researchers knew for sure that they could stay in the lake and survive. But there's one more essential ingredient to the long-term sustainability of paddlefish populations at Caddo Lake.
They're just a long-lived species, but we don't know until they actually start reproducing and potentially recruiting into the population of whether those environmental flows are doing their job and is capable of sustaining paddlefish again. So we're just now getting into the meat of the question we're asking is, will they stay there? Will they reproduce? Will they recruit into their population?
Because paddlefish are large, reaching weights of up to 200 pounds, and take up to 12 years to start reproducing, a fish hatchery can't easily produce, grow, tag, and stock adults into the lake to track their reproduction. In 2017, researchers decided to track adult paddlefish already thriving and growing in the lake for the final test.
From the radio tracking, we were able to figure out that they like to hang out below the dam. And we'd find at times that in the beginning of the 47 that we stocked, we'd have over 30 of them up there at one time. And so they really were attracted to that flow. So we took advantage when the Army Corps of Engineers stopped the flow coming out of the dam so that they could do some repairs on the dam. And lo and behold, we caught 130 paddlefish. We were shocked.
Of those 130 paddlefish, they found many that had been opportunistically stocked over the years, along with several that were among the 47 tagged fish that were stocked in 2014. Now that they were 4 years old, they were over 4 feet long and big enough to put in four-year radio tags. On another trip in 2018, researchers used electrofishing boats to temporarily stun and collect more adult paddlefish below the dam to implant new acoustic transmitters that last up to 10 years. More than a dozen paddlefish have been implanted with the new tags, giving researchers even more insight into their spawning behaviors.
We can now put actual receivers in the water at those spawning areas that we've mapped out and see if those fish are using them. We're going to get some great information coming up here.
While tracking these adult fish remains an ongoing project, 2018 also kicked off the beginning of a 10-year stocking program that aims to place more than 100,000 paddlefish into Caddo Lake by 2028.
That same time, Tishomingo National Fish Hatchery had just fulfilled its last obligation to the state of Oklahoma on their paddlefish rearing, and so they were going to have the ability to produce paddlefish for us at no cost to us.
Producing paddlefish is no easy feat. As we've discussed, paddlefish require very specific conditions to spawn. These toothless frankenfish don't eat solid food either. In their natural habitat, they primarily feed on zooplankton and insect larvae. So getting them to successfully eat artificial food in the hatchery setting is a very difficult task.
And so they've been doing it for a long time, and they're about the best in the business at it, and they're one of the few hatcheries in the country. There's a handful of other ones that rear paddlefish and stock them out into the wild. So they've had a lot of experience doing it, and they're all doing it for us. They're helping, as well as TPWD, to transfer the fish down to the Caddo Lake and the Big Cypress Bayou to stock them. So they've been a great help. They have a lot of expertise. People like to say, well, you're a paddlefish expert, and I'm like, I am not a paddlefish expert. I simply have chased them around in listening to their radio tags. The paddlefish experts, for me, they are up in Tishomingo National Fish Hatchery.
With hatchery staff handling the most difficult task of producing and transporting the baby paddlefish to Caddo Lake, researchers and local citizens can gather together at least annually for the next 10 years to participate in the fun part, releasing thousands of them at a time into their new home.
It happened to me, and now I've watched it happen to every other person that's come out to see one of these releases. It's almost like the face that you have on Christmas morning, like so excited. I feel like when people are around the paddlefish and they see them, I mean, they're just in awe, and it makes them almost like kind of a childlike wonder at nature and at the world around us. I've seen some beautiful smiles on some fully grown people who have had a great time.
And so it's really kind of just exciting that everybody's so excited about doing that. The paddlefish is kind of the focal species for that. It's out front, and everybody can see the paddlefish and jump on board with it. It's a little harder to go, well, the water, hey, look, it's supposed to flood right now. But when they see the fish coming in, they get excited about that because it's actually something tangible that they can see.
Stocking thousands of these little guys into Caddo Lake is no small achievement.
And it's sort of the fun, visible, touchable, tangible result of a lot of work.
Although they don't know it, they've become a poster child for restoring the health of the lake and internationally recognized wetland.
That's an excellent way to look at it, a poster child, because it's such a unique fish. You talk about paddlefish, you show a picture, and people are actually going to probably be very interested in what's going on.
So while the paddlefish is the fish that we are really proud of restocking and enabling its success here, there are so many other species that are benefiting from our flow regime or from reductions in pollution. But this one, it kind of all comes together. And to be able to restore something that has been around for 350 million years until very recent history is really awesome and exciting. And it does tell us that we're on a path to a healthy Caddo Lake system.
Some may hear about the stocking and wonder when, if ever, Texans will be able to fish for paddlefish. In other states like Oklahoma, biologists are able to manage their unique populations with limited harvest opportunities available for anglers. The answer in Texas is, for now, not anytime soon while populations are being rebuilt. But if you do snag one on accident, Mike has some advice.
You can't decide what you're going to catch before you catch it. You just kind of have to take whatever you get. And so if you catch a paddlefish, which some people do, knowing we have to make sure that people know, do not keep these fish. You have to let them go, because if you get caught with them, it's a big fine. And so enjoy them, look at them, take a good picture of them, release them. Heck, send us the picture. We'd love to see it.
Long term, researchers say it would be great if Texas had a robust enough population to allow for catch and release fishing. They're hopeful that successes at Caddo Lake could lead to other river systems replicating the improved flows and habitat restoration that are necessary to restore paddlefish in other areas. Until then, don't despair if you really want to meet a paddlefish. The Texas Freshwater Fishery Center in Athens has a few on display, as does the Shreveport Aquarium in Louisiana. The partners that assist with stocking them, like the Caddo Lake Institute, also welcome volunteers at stocking events. If you want to learn more about paddlefish and even participate and contribute to their restoration, find links online at underthetexassky.org. I'm Aubrey Buzek.
You know, after listening to Aubrey's story, I was inspired to write and recite for you now a paddlefish haiku. Ancient paddlefish, welcome back to Caddo Lake. We have your back, Jack. If you can do better, and let's be honest, you can, write a haiku about the great Texas outdoors and share it at underthetexassky.org. Just click on the Get Involved link on the menu bar to find out how. Your haiku could end up on a future podcast. We've got shows coming up on horned lizards, spotted sea trout, and artists and musicians who have been inspired by nature, among other topics. Let your imagination run wild. Coming up, we find out what Cassandra and Christopher Neve have been up to. They're our 20-something-year-old sister and brother duo who are attempting to reconnect with the outdoors. But first, this is Under the Texas Sky from Texas Parks and Wildlife. I am your haiku hack, Cecilia Nasty. Support from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation allows us to bring you stories from under the Texas sky. In fact, since 1991, the foundation has raised more than $190 million to conserve the lands, waters, and wildlife of our state. You can help by becoming a member. Find out how at wewillnotbetamed.org. 20-something-year-old siblings Cassandra and Christopher Neve of Austin decided they wanted to spend the new year rediscovering the outdoors and all related activities. On our first podcast called New Year, New Choices, they vowed to spend more time doing just that. Well, best laid plans, as they say. The responsibilities of adulthood have become more complex for the Sibs since they made that pledge. Coordinating their respective schedules so they can participate in outdoor adventures together has presented a bigger challenge than either of them previously anticipated. Christopher went full-time as a paramedic since the podcast debuted and then promptly injured his back and was out of commission for weeks. Yet, he's back on his feet for how long is anyone's guess. His first foray outside since his injury was to a neighborhood park to play disc golf with friends during an early spring cold snap.
This is kind of the first time I've been able to get out and enjoy myself and not worry too much about my back. Go to a little neighborhood park and try to disc golf. Okay. Whew. Man, it's cold. no. Mine came out. There, I did it.
Let's just say Christopher will never become a disc golf pro, but at least he got outside. Meanwhile, as an AP human geography teacher, Chris's sister Cassandra helps to expand young minds by day, and at night helps diners to expand their waistlines as a server at a local restaurant. Even so, she didn't mind spending an evening with her mother, Jen, preparing and enjoying a meal at Central Market during a wild game cooking class.
Which I would never have taken had you suggested it, because I would have thought it was, you know, how to butcher your deer and cook it in a stove and, you know, nothing that I necessarily do, but it actually looks really awesome. Some really cool recipes.
I think it's a lot of fun. I think the class is really well structured, and I think what it really has brought home to us is there's so many different things you can do. So this is really exciting to see a different level of cooking brought to wild game.
Cassandra and Christopher promised me that they would do their best to visit state parks together in the months ahead, as well as challenge themselves to try new activities. We are rooting for you, Neves. By the way, Texas Parks and Wildlife collaborates with Central Market to offer those wild game and fish cooking classes every other month at 7 of their locations. A Parks and Wildlife volunteer is on hand at each class to provide background on the agency, wildlife management, and to answer questions about the proteins on the plate. That night it was duck, quail eggs, wild boar, and venison. And we have a link to the cooking schools at underthetexassky.org. It's now time for our Shout Out to the Wild segment. It's where you get to share your experiences about the Texas outdoors, whether they are funny, heartwarming, inspiring, or cautionary. Or you can just let us know what you love about the natural world of the Lone Star State. Do it at underthetexassky.org and click on the Get Involved link on the menu bar. Tori Anderson did.
Hi, I'm Tori Anderson. I'm from San Angelo, Texas. And I want to tell you about my very first camping trip ever. And it happened when I was 25. Growing up, I had really bad eczema and could never really be outdoors for very long, or my skin would break out into these awful rashes and hives. As I got older and my skin calmed down, I had always wanted to embrace the outdoors and go camping, but I didn't know how, and I thought it was just too late for me. My boyfriend is a member of the Stewards of the Wild Fort Worth chapter and has introduced me to so many great opportunities to be outdoors that are available and enjoyable right here in Texas. Recently, I was able to go camping for the first time for real in Big Bend, and I absolutely loved it. It was a life-changing experience that I'll never forget. Now I'm finally able to attend camping trips with my best group of girlfriends, one who happens to be a new Texas State Parks ambassador. We are planning a girls-only camping trip to Brazos Bend State Park soon. I just thought I'd reach out and share my experience. You're never too old or too inexperienced to enjoy the outdoors. There's always time to try something new and find a new passion. And in Texas, we have so many opportunities to enjoy nature at every level, beginner or expert, young or old. So I challenge everyone to go out there and enjoy camping, and maybe I'll see you on the trail.
Thanks, Tori. I am feeling inspired to get outside now. How about you? If you want to inspire or entertain others with your experiences in the Texas outdoors, go to underthetexassky.org and click on the Get Involved link and share your shout out to the wild. And so we come to the end of another podcast. Under the Texas Sky is a production of Texas Parks and Wildlife and is available for streaming or download at underthetexassky.org or wherever you get your podcasts. We record at the Blockhouse in Austin, Texas. Joel Block does our sound design. Thanks again to Aubrey Buzek for the paddlefish restoration story. I'm your producer and host, Cecilia Nasty, reminding you that life's better outside when you're under the Texas sky. Major support for this podcast comes from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, conserving our wild things and wild places for over 25 years. Join us again next time for Under the Texas Sky.